We have time for questions. I know a number of you have submitted questions by card. You can also feel free to come to the newly placed two microphones if you want to do it face-to-face. I was just wondering if you could educate me a little bit about your vascular lab. You mentioned that you really value the tissue perfusion imaging.
Yes.
And I was wondering what that adds to your exam and to Doppler. Like, what additional information do you get that informs your treatment?
That's a great question. So our standard vascular lab study, if you come into my office, into my vascular lab, and you've got a wound on your foot or pain in your leg, you're going to get our standard non-invasive diagnostic evaluation, which basically gives us an assessment of overall flow in the limb.
Yep.
We'll use this technology if we're going to do something to get you to heal and to tell us how much we have to do to get you to heal. So what this is you have to actually make an injection in the patient of a sort of a dye, but then that dye is picked up by this camera, and it tells us where the blood is going and how much is getting there. So we could bring you to the operating room, perform an angioplasty, perform the test, and then, oh, gee, there's not enough. We need to do a little bit more.
You know, just to kind of expand on that a little bit, I was wondering, kind of marrying or wedding your two interests. Like, have you used that at all in folks with Steele syndrome?
We haven't. That's a great idea.
Yeah,
we have not
kind of
used
help,
it for Steele.
Because, of always, like, do you intervene, do you not intervene?
Right. No, that'd be great to try.
Okay, please.
Let's see. Abnormal flow studies, Doppler flow, extremity arteries. Patient without any symptoms. That's a great question. So I see this all the time as well. So if somebody comes into the office, and let's say their medical doctor couldn't feel a pulse, so they send them into my office and they get a vascular lab study, and obviously they have PAD, I'm very conservative. So what I tell people is there are two reasons for me to work on your leg. One is if you're having so much pain that you want something done. If you're having so much pain when you walk, which is called claudication, that you'd rather have surgery than have that pain, then that's a reason to do it. Or if I think if we don't do anything, you're going to lose the leg or not heal. So if somebody comes in with asymptomatic or mildly symptomatic PAD, I'm very conservative. But it's good to know that they had it. That's not saying we shouldn't screen those patients. That's not saying we shouldn't look for those patients in your practice. I would say most of the people that get sent to me, I don't operate on them. But they're so thankful to know that they don't need that and their leg's not in imminent danger. They know they have PAD. Maybe they get a carotid Doppler so they don't get a stroke. Maybe they get a heart stress test, because if they have it in their leg, they're going to have it in their neck and their heart. So even if I don't treat their asymptomatic or mildly symptomatic lower extremity PAD, we still need to look for it and we still need to know about it and follow it. And it may stimulate us to help them prevent strokes and heart attacks. But that's a fabulous question. And, I would say if you have people in the community where you send 10 patients to them for mild, and they get 10 procedures, that's not a good thing. Let's see. Any novel developments with bioprintographs? That's also a great question. So we just purchased a 3D printer. Just purchased a 3D printer for that complex that I was showing you. I don't have any experience with them. There are some other biologic grafts out there. Jeff Lawson, who was at Duke, has a biologically created graft that he's working with, but that's something we're certainly going to look into. But at this point in time, we're not doing much with that. Let's see. Oh, this is another good question. I have vascular surgeon in the audience. Any role for cadaveric vein graft? So cadaveric vein is, it's vein from a cadaver, which is treated so that it can be placed into another patient. I tried that before I did my vein patch procedure, and it didn't work in my hands. These cadaveric veins are basically dead collagen tubes. It's basically treated vein that's basically non-viable collagen. They don't last long. They thrombose fairly frequently in my hands. Now, there are some papers out there, although I would argue with some of the technology, the methodology, but there are papers that people have had success with them. They didn't work for me. They always clotted off relatively quickly. The only time I use them is if someone has an infected leg and I want to, unfortunately, have to go through the infection, because they don't usually get as infected as some other thing. So I'll use it as a temporary measure in an infected leg, but I don't use them routinely.
We do have someone willing to ask a question face-to-face.
Oh, sure.
Please?
Do we get a prize for this? stepping up to the mic.
Yeah, that's right. Free cup of coffee.
Fantastic presentation.
Oh, thank you.
I couldn't help but notice that the financial justification to build the program was all about revenue generated by the hospital. We just started an ESCO in your backyard.
Oh.
What would you tell the nephrologists who are financially at risk for the total cost of care for those patients?
How much time do you have? No, that's a great question. It's something we're all going to have to struggle with. You know, I think what I would say is you have to partner with your hospital system so that they can share that kind of data with you, what kind of downstream revenue is generated by the ESCO. I think you obviously have to take a hard look at your overhead. You have to take a hard look at the quality that you're delivering. You need to track your outcomes very carefully and adjust accordingly. I guess that's all extrapolating from my experience with the LIM Center. I am involved with Dialysis Access with Dr. Soar, but we don't run any dialysis centers at this time. So extrapolating from our LIM Centers, I would make those comments.
But, well, I guess to sort of reframe the question, it's like theoretically if with your ESCO, you're also at risk for a patient who ends up in a LIM Center. And I would actually think that the case for cost savings could be made pretty readily given the, you know, extended hospitalizations amputees tend to have. And so if you compare a program with and without limb preservation, you actually may be able to show a cost savings based on that.
Yeah, you may. And I think also preventive care is very, very important. So how many times, you know, do I see somebody in the office with just a foot of gangrene and you're just wondering, did nobody take off the shoe and sock and take a look? So I think if we can be preventive in an ESCO or accountable care organization model where we're going to, again, get baseline non-invasive Doppler studies so we know that we can follow them before these bad things develop. So I think some preventive care could also go a long way towards helping with cost control. Let's see. Oh, this is a good question, too. Good questions. Yes, in the chronic kidney disease patient, is vascular calcification a significant contributor? I know, are there any differences in prognosis? Great question. It definitely is, especially with diabetes. So diabetes causes calcifications to be placed into the media of the artery very, very frequently. It does make it more difficult for me to bypass them. That's why I think my little patch actually helps, because it's much easier to sew that nice piece of vein patch than a stiff tube right to those calcified small arteries. So I think calcification is a problem. Over the past 25 years, I've learned enough that it doesn't bother me anymore, but it does a lot of people. I have one of my new partners, asked me to look at an arteriogram. He was going to offer the patient an amputation because of extensive calcification and didn't think that a bypass could be done. I said, no, we can't. So I think with certain techniques and certain ways of handling the artery, it shouldn't be a major problem, but it can be. It also can be a problem for endovascular therapy, these heavily calcified, especially tibial arteries. So, yeah, that's a great question. So short answer, it does happen. It makes it more difficult, but it shouldn't stop you. And then the last one. Ooh, another good question. Should we avoid putting – I don't get these good questions in the vascular meetings. I finished and they say, okay, thanks. Should we avoid putting a kidney transplant on the same side of a previous BKAK? Well, you know, I don't know that it is so much determined by a previous BKAK, but it's probably determined by the arterial anatomy. So if someone's had PAD, especially symptomatic PAD, so we get consults all the time from our transplant surgeons, can you at least do non-invasive arterial Doppler studies because they're going to put a kidney in, the patient does have symptomatic PAD, whether it has been an amputation in the past, or maybe they have bad claudication, or maybe they have had a stent on one side. So, yes, these things all factor into that. I think in terms of the kidney, I would use the best iliac inflow artery you've got. But, and, you know, I've never really seen significant steal from a kidney of the lower extremity. I could imagine it could happen. Mm-hmm. So, but that's a great question. You need some good imaging. if the patient has symptomatic PAD or has had an amputation, to help guide you in terms of which iliac to put in. And we sometimes get called by our transplant surgeons, back to the calcification issue, if their aortoiliac circulation is heavily calcified, we will get calls from our transplant surgeons, can you come help us with this iliac anastomosis?
Well, Dr. Neville, thanks for
it's been my pleasure.
Speaking to us and expanding our horizons.
Thank you very much. Thanks.